Well, more women are earning a college degree these days than men, and about half of the U.S. labor force is women. Even so, the higher you look on the corporate ladder, the fewer females you'll see, whether it's as corporate executives or members of the board. Our next guest continually explores how both men and women are perceived in the workplace, whether as a regular contributor to Marketplace or as producer and host of the podcast, The Broad Experience, a conversation about women, the workplace, and success. Ashley Milne-Tite examines the effects of gender on the job. Ashley Milne-Tite is in town to talk tonight on Being Bossy, a conversation about women and men in the workplace. That'll be at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. And I'm happy to welcome here to Up to Date. Welcome. So good to have you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I want to start with a factor that you've brought up in your work for Marketplace, Ashley. Research shows that persons in positions of power will promote others like themselves. So, you know, if men hold these top positions, they are more likely to promote other men and continue the good old boys club cycle. How can all this be broken? How do you break the cycle?
That is such a broad question to
yes,
not
is.
To make a pun.
Yeah.
I think it starts with both genders, well, especially men becoming more aware of some of the unconscious biases that mm-hmm. they hold about what women are capable of. And I don't mean to sort of put everything onto men, because frankly, women are just as biased as guys as to what women can achieve and what we're capable of. I mean, we're all raised in the same society with the same ideas about, you know, what men should do and what women should do. So a lot of the research shows that it's actually both sexes that sort of look askance when women negotiate aggressively for pay, for instance. We're all conditioned to see women as people who are, you know, we're meant to be pleasant and mm-hmm. nice. Mm-hmm. And I often joke that, you know, being British and female is a double whammy, because you've got two cultures essentially telling you to sort of pipe down, accept what you have, be grateful for it, and be pleasant and accommodating. So that's sort of centuries of conditioning there and expectations about how
I was going to say, just the fact that we're sitting here talking about what women are capable of suggests that there's some bias. There. We're talking about women here and questioning what they're capable of, in a sense, more so than we are men. We're assuming that men can sort of do it all.
Right. Yeah, and I think that certainly has been the expectation forever. Well, I mean, when you say all, it depends what all means, because
well,
I would say there's bias in the other direction when it comes to men's roles as parents. I mean, a lot of guys now either are fuller, more hands-on parents than their dads were, or they would like to be. But there's still actually quite a bit of bias in society about men as caregivers. And the guys that really want to be present dads have that to cope with. Sometimes they may be in a workplace which is fairly unfriendly to the idea that actually they might like to leave early
yeah.
or they want to take their kid to the doctor. I mean, sometimes as a guy, you're viewed as the hero mm-hmm. when you leave early to
mm-hmm.
take your kid to the doctor.
That's
and the
right.
woman, unfortunately, is viewed as a mom.
No,
you know,
I get that.
That happens a lot. But at the same time, I think it's really true that the flip side of this bias that it's really subtle these days, but that women still experience, is a bias that men have to put up with, which is that they should be the ones who are on it all the time at work. And that to be a parent, it just isn't as important for them. But to a
yeah.
lot of men, it is really important.
Hey, are you surprised that these mindsets, these opinions haven't shifted more, given the fact we're in 2015 here and we like to think of ourselves as being in a very much of a different place?
So when I got interested in this topic, I was surprised, because this wasn't something that I have been interested in all my life at all. It came partly through working for Marketplace and doing stories about women's lives that made me think about gender in a way that I never had, even though I was a woman in the workplace
mm-hmm.
all the time. But the more, you know, the more interviews I do, the more research I do, I think, if you think about it, so what, women have been in the workplace in large numbers since maybe the 70s, 80s. The 60s was really the era in which they were considered to have stepped into the workplace. That's only 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
50 years is nothing when you consider thousands and thousands of years when women were mothers and helpers.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
I mean, 50 years is a drop in the ocean compared to that. And all our attitudes come from those many, many, many years and those messages we get from society that have been, you know, they've been out there for millennia.
Well, in one report you did on corporate boards, you noted that the action of the investment fund CalPERS and its efforts with Urban Outfitters to change its board composition. What went on there?
Oh, that was so interesting. Yeah, so Essentially, CalPERS wanted the board to, they didn't have any women on the board, and then they put one woman on the board, but it turned out that she was, I believe, the wife of the chief executive. And they were pushing, saying, look, all your, so many of your customers are female. I mean, that's why this is so important, whether you happen to be selling whatever you're selling, whether you're selling clothing or whether you're selling consumer goods. Something like 85% of people who make the buying decisions in this country and probably around the world are female. So it really doesn't make sense when all the people at the top of a company making those decisions are men.
Yeah.
And that was what they've been very active in pushing for the companies that they invest in to get more women on their boards, particularly when their company that is selling so much.
I was going to say, it's pretty amazing that was the case. I mean, so counterintuitive. And what are they thinking?
Essentially their response was, this is the right decision for us. They were basically saying, just don't interfere in our business, please. You don't know what you're talking about. I mean, that's the sort of the message they sent out. I mean, their press release and this was on it was very short.
Yeah. Well, yet diversity in the boardroom can positively affect a company's bottom line, at least. So I'm wondering, why aren't more women and minorities being seated at that particular table?
Oh, that's such a big topic of conversation. And I think just recently.
And do we know that to be true, that you can have a positive outcome if you diversify your board?
There has been research to show that. But I believe there has also been some research that shows, actually, it doesn't make a difference. There's more research showing that having more females on your board, that the company does better, effectively. Mm-hmm. But someone will always come out and say, no, well, we did this study and it didn't make a difference. But
Okay.
I haven't read every single study, but the predominant research seems to suggest that you have more women on your boards, the company does better. So why, I mean, being considered for a board position, that's a whole process. And of course, what you mentioned at the very beginning, the mindset, it's very much about who you know. Mm-hmm. And so needless to say, of course, when most of those board members are men, who they know are other very successful men, CEOs, former CEOs. It's just that women and minorities tend to be outside that club, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Sheryl Sandberg and a prominent guy in Silicon Valley whose name is currently escaping me, they recently launched an initiative to sort of do a boot camp for women and minorities to get them board ready.
Mm-hmm.
But I read an interesting article that argued against that and said, hey, it's not women and minorities who need a boot camp. It's board members who need a boot camp.
So to want to reach out
exactly,
and grab those
so
folks.
So that they can recognize the qualities that these different people have.
That's
so
interesting.
Yeah.
Women in the workplace is our topic today. Your questions, welcome. 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. You can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Russ from Overland Park, you're on the show with Ashley Milne-Tite. Nice to have you.
Hello, thank you. Anecdote, actually. Late 60s, I was in third grade, and I called up my teacher on sexism. She was exhibiting unconscious bias. When little Johnny would get a question wrong, she'd say, little Johnny, you can do better than that. Come on, and prompt at him. Whereas if little Jamie got the question wrong, she'd say in a tired voice, that's okay, dear, you're doing the best that you can, and move on, which is flea training young women for failure. And I really do not believe that in the educational system, we're all that much beyond that. I will take my answer via FM. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Russ.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Starts
early.
I absolutely believe it really does start early, but I don't want to say anything, you know, against the many teachers who are doing fantastic work every day. But it's interesting because most elementary school teachers, the enormous majority of them, are women. And I've never studied this. I've never, you know, done a study in a classroom. And it would be really interesting to read, to see if there were any research about what the caller was just talking about. Because unwittingly, and in fact, one anecdote from me, my cousin, male cousin, is a teacher. And he told a story similar to that about the way he had treated a little girl student back in the day. Mm-hmm. This was 20 years or so ago. But he told a story where he essentially let her get away with it, let her get away without the same kind of reprimand he would have given the guy, because it's all about treating women more softly. And he said he didn't think about it until later, but then he realized that it was a form of bias.
Well, the title of your discussion tonight, Being Bossy, I mean, is it still a case of when it's a man, he's the boss, when it's a woman, she's being bossy?
Yes, I think I think on the whole it is. And of course, Sheryl Sandberg, who's the Facebook CEO and who wrote this book, Lean In, which has done very well about women and work, she's tried to ban the word bossy. And I don't feel as strongly about it as some women do. But it is true that we never call little boys bossy, but we do call little girls bossy.
Yes, we do.
So there's something at work there.
Who's more likely to be uncomfortable with a female boss? I mean, is it men or women, or is it both?
Honestly, I think it's both, because I've had reports, I hear from listeners quite a lot. And unfortunately, I've had quite a few female listeners write in and say, I know I'm not supposed to say this, but I really haven't enjoyed my experience with my female boss, or giving sort of tales of being undermined by a female boss, which is such a shame, because I have to say, I had a female boss years ago, and I came away from that situation thinking, I never want to work for a woman again. She was insecure. She was undermining. It made me completely biased. Then I moved over here, worked for two fantastic women at the Museum of Modern Art, and my view was completely changed. It does come down to the individual.
Yeah.
But I will say that because women in leadership are so much rarer, often to get there, they've jumped through some difficult hoops, and they may have been in competition with other people, and that can make women who are, the air is thin up there, there aren't very many other women, it can cause at least some female bosses to be quite insecure and to not enjoy any sort of female competition. I haven't heard as much from men, actually, about having female bosses.
Ashley Milne-Tite's in town tonight. She'll be giving a talk, Being Bossy, a conversation about women and men in the workplace. It takes place at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. Go to kclibrary.org if you want to grab a seat or get more information about tonight's event with Ashley Milne-Tite. Again, that's at 6:30 this evening at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. You know, I cover politics for a living. There's been some research that shows that women sometimes don't give nearly in the amounts that men do. And even when there have been in 20 years ago, when women were venturing into the public sphere more directly than they had been for so many years, that women weren't coming and stepping, women contributors weren't stepping up with them and making contributions to help their sisters out there, in a sense, which really surprised me.
Yeah, and I think I've heard that. I thought you were going to talk about women politicians raising money, actually, which is something that even some women politicians have talked about, the fact that they find it hard to do.
Yeah.
That is fascinating about women not giving in as large amounts. And I wonder if that has to do with, in general, women aren't earning as much as their male counterparts, or not realizing, again, it's sort of about not being factored into this system for many generations, and perhaps not even realizing how much heft you need to put monetarily behind somebody's campaign to actually make it successful. I don't know, but that is certainly very interesting.
You know, I wonder sometimes how hypocritical we are in this country. We encourage girls and young women to pursue their dreams, but too often when they do, those dreams are labeled as ambition. And for some reason, we make it sound less attractive when it's applied to a female. Do you see that sometimes, too?
I know. I actually did an early show about ambition and power and how women feel about those things. And certainly an older woman I interviewed for the show said, I think women have a problem with ambition. They're afraid to own it. It's unattractive. But younger women, I don't have a problem with that word. And I don't think young women have a problem with the word ambition.
So you see a difference with the younger generation coming along?
Yes, absolutely. I don't think women in their 20s are afraid to call themselves ambitious, or at least many of them aren't. So I think I do think generationally it's a label that is considered bad if you are of a certain vintage. But I think if you're 25, I'd be surprised. I haven't heard from any young women who are afraid to call themselves ambitious.
So maybe the future portends a little better.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I think gradually these ideas and discussions of how we raise girls and boys are percolating through. And it's such a bit of a cliche, but the more awareness you bring to the topic, the more you make people think about it, which is really what I'm trying to do with this show. As someone who honestly was not interested interested in this topic 10 years ago.
Really?
Not at all. It was all born out of Marketplace and this reporting I started doing while I was there about women's lives. And I started thinking, huh, oh, God, never thought about that. Even though I was a woman, you know, every day, obviously. But I think I was one of these people who found anything pertaining to feminism, I sort of shuddered a bit at that. And I think a lot of people do. I think that word has become tainted. And when I was growing up, I thought this was something, I thought, oh, equality between the sexes, let's face it, it's all been dealt with. That was my mother's generation that dealt with that.
Yeah.
There are no problems, and people who went on about it were just bores, frankly.
But the field, I imagine, the range of potential stories for someone like you is pretty amazing.
It is.
There's a lot out there to mine, right?
It's rich, and it's richer than I thought, because when I started doing the show, I thought, oh, I wonder if there's enough to talk about on specifically on women in the workplace. I have ideas, I mean, months ahead. I have so many ideas, I don't know how I'm going to cover them all. So every week I hear from somebody who tells me a story that makes me think, that's a fantastic story. Yeah. I want to talk about that.
What's holding women from climbing the corporate ladder? That's our topic here with Ashley Milne-Tite. How many women do you see the higher you look up your company's ladder? Are you a woman trying to work your way up? And what's that been like for you? 816-235-2888 is our number. Again, 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Now, again, though, you know, the research shows that women bring traits to management that can improve a business. I mean, a collaborative approach, empathy, the ability to listen. I mean, is the corporate world really that uncomfortable with this particular skill set? Because you think it would be embraced.
I know, would.
Members of Congress always say, even the men say, well, it's great to have women in Congress because it makes it a more collaborative body.
Right. Oh, I mean, there are so many different companies out there with different people leading them. And I'm sure it depends on the individuals at the top, frankly, all this stuff does. Like if you have a male CEO and he's really invested in getting more women leaders because, say, his customer base is largely female, that makes such a difference. But I think, let's face it, a lot of us are we're traditional. Traditions die hard. The way we think about gender roles, as I said before, go back thousands of years. It's not easy to just put that thought process that you've been raised with, if maybe you're a guy in your 50s and you've thought a certain way all your life, it's not that easy to sort of lay that aside. So I think it really depends on the individual and the company. I agree with you that it's a little surprising, but at the same time, companies and company structure, it's pretty rigid.
Yeah. Back to some calls here. Richard from Kansas City, Missouri. Richard, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks. Good discussion. I don't know if perhaps either one of you heard the story. I think it was on NPR about maybe a month or two ago, but it was about how there used to be a lot of women or young women going into computer science and coding, and then the numbers dropped off dramatically, like in the late 70s and early 80s, and they sort of traced it to the marketing of early computers and how they were marketed towards boys as something, you know, as a science thing to build. And at the same time, the numbers of over the next however many years, the numbers of women going into computer science in school just dropped off dramatically. So it was kind of looked at as, you know, a whole generation was basically said, okay, computers are like toy soldiers, they're for men, but they're not for women.
Right.
Because there did used to be a lot of women in early coding, early computer work, I guess back in the 60s and 70s, a big percentage were women.
Yep, that's true. That's true. And you know what I heard, which I hadn't dug this up in my research. I heard it on public radio, no less. But there was a discussion about this, and a woman who was an expert on this early era of women in computing said the reason women used to go into computing was back in the 60s and 70s, it was marketed as sort of secretarial clerical work, which that was the big job for women. And actually, amazingly, still is. When you look at the statistics, it's still the most done job by women in this country. But it was all typing. It was all about typing things into a computer, and typing was seen as something that the ladies did and that the guys did not. So that's, I just thought that was fascinating. But you're right, the marketing has changed greatly. And I spoke to a woman who studied computer science at Carnegie Mellon in the 90s recently, and she said there were more Davids in my class than there were women.
Hmm. Richard, thanks for the call. Sarah tweeted us this, at KCUR, up to date. How about corporate assistance in child care, access to affordable child care, keep women from moving up in their careers?
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably
there are very few companies that provide any kind of childcare. I mean, people feel like they've found some fantastic shrine when they work for a company that provides a creche or any kind of childcare at all. I mean, obviously, you know this, in this country, government-funded childcare or company-funded childcare is just very unusual. It's just not considered something that is for the greater good. It's considered it's up to the individual to pay for it. And that's a big difference between the US and Europe. And I often think when I do my show, I have quite a number of listeners in Europe, and I think, gosh, they must think we're so strange because they have all these things that aren't available to American women, which actually does make life a lot harder for mums and dads in some cases.
I just want to point out your website for the broad experience, a conversation about women, the workplace, and success is thebroadexperience.com. And you've advised people in the past to sort of take a look at the show's archive and go through the list and listen to some of the early shows. I love the titles of your shows. Killing the Ideal Woman is one of them. The Good Girls Revolt, Home as Career Killer, and then When Men Stay Home, The Outsider Within, Transgender in the Workplace. You're covering a lot of stuff.
That was a fascinating show. Yeah, I'm trying to. I'm really trying to make it as broad as possible to cover any theme that fits in with women and work that I can. It's been great. Great fun. Very enlightening.
Again, Ashley Milne-Tite speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. Reserve a seat by going to kclibrary.org. Her website, again, is thebroadexperience.com. Ashley, so good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having
me. You bet.
Me.
Sure appreciate it.